Hello, and welcome to The Next Great Car Era, a podcast by EV Tuners. I'm your host, Daniel Martin, and for today's episode, I had the pleasure of recording on-site with Ryan Bossery. Ryan is the owner of RyeWire Motorsports Electronics and specializes in custom wire harnesses and engine bay parts for all types of sport compact cars. His passion for cars began with the Honda CRX, and he has been building and modifying cars since 1998. Over the years, Ryan has owned many different rides and helped build some of the most well-known cars on the scene today. After a thrilling tour through the shop where I saw multiple different projects, Ryan and I sat down to take a deep dive into what he is doing in the EV space and what we all have to look forward to from his shop. Enjoy. Well, I appreciate you sitting down with me today.
Of course. Thanks for coming out here.
Awesome. So, for those of out there that don't know, maybe a little quick intro, a little background about who you are, Ryan.
Yeah. So my name is Ryan Bossery, and I have a company called RyeWire Motorsport Electronics. We do motorsport wiring. We build systems for race cars. We don't technically offer tuning, but we collaborate with all the engine programmers and tuners. We build wiring looms for them. We build wiring looms for street cars, race cars, everything in between. We have private label stuff that we do for companies. So if you buy a wiring harness from a company, it might have been built by us, even though it might not say the brand name.
Oh, that's cool.
So we do that. That's the best, because then it's repeat. You know, you can develop one thing and nerd out on it, and then it's just repeatable business. Yeah. And that's the best for my business. But the passion is to do like the one-off race cars. So if I have time and, you know, somebody comes to me with a pro level FD car and we recommend electronics, and then we build it all out, and then we have these wiring harnesses that, you know, work great for the guys all season long, and that's the goal. That's a lot of fun. But yeah, to pay the bills, it's like the mass produced stuff,
The repeat
stuff, yeah.
And it seems like, just taking a quick loop around the shop, there's like a lot of variety, right?
Yeah,
there's some that are like super custom,
yeah,
and then more repeatable.
Yeah, exactly. Well. Yeah, so like for the EV projects, when we start talking about that, but there's going to be development of something that is that same mentality of something that's easy, that can be repeated, and then there's other stuff that's very custom and probably might not ever be repeated.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
So how did you get started in this?
Doing engine swaps for friends and myself.
And yourself.
Yes. Okay. So I was in a CRXs. Not Hondas, not cars. I was into CRXs.
Just that one?
This is where I like, yeah. Just in the CRX.
Nice.
Like you saw one I had back there. It's not
Gorgeous.
Mine, but that's, yeah, that's like my favorite car of all time is the CRX. So I was super involved with that. And there was a whole bunch of people that were into these CRXs. And it was like the NorCal CRX club, right? Okay. So my friends were like running it and stuff. And then, we started doing swaps, yeah. Right? And, you know, I did a swap for myself, and, you know, I was even before I met the NorCal CRX guys, I was doing, you know, swaps in my dad's dirt driveway, you know, and then getting him running and then driving straight to LA to visit my family when I was living in NorCal, right? So it was like, wow, that actually worked. Like, yeah. And my dad's like, oh, you really got something there, right? So I started selling these little tiny wiring looms on eBay.
Okay.
And they were just like, add VTEC, add one little sensor. And then it turned into doing these swaps. And then it turned into, oh man, one of these models of the car was the dual point car with two injectors. You got to add a bunch of stuff to get it up to the level of doing a swap.
Yeah.
So they were like the hardest ones to work with. It was like, don't buy a DX because you got to do all this wiring. And wiring is like the devil and nobody knows how to do it. And it's the great unknown. So I did a couple of like kind of, you know, tear down and rewrap wiring harnesses that worked for the dual point to multi-point conversion. Then the challenge was I had a friend, her name was Jade, and she was up in NorCal, and she's like, I want to do this engine swap, but I want to do OBD1. So it's like the newer electronics. And she had a DX. So, and I was basically asked, hey, when you come up and help me, can you maybe like pre-make a wiring harness? I'm like, pre-make a wiring harness for that, right?
Wow.
So then I like did this whole pre-made thing. And then I went up to her house and we did the whole swap in one day because it was her daily. So it's like, hey, oh, by the way, you know, we only have this weekend and I got to go drive to work on Monday, right? Like, oh, shit. Okay. So
that's a big day.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was. And I'm like, oh, and by the way, you're doing the swap. I'm not going to do the swap.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to watch you. And I'll do the wiring and stuff because she wanted to learn how to do it. And she did kind of know how to do it.
Yeah.
But wasn't well-versed like I was. So, you know, if there was a bolt that was too tight, because she was tiny, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like crack it loose and tighten it back up. Okay. And then I built this wire loom, put it on the car, and then like I wired it in and I kind of soldered some things on. And it was kind of ugly, but it was like made to, like I could have shipped that to someone, right?
Yeah.
So then that kind of got me thinking, okay, this could be something, I could do it this way. And then it just, one thing led to another and it turned into like a full-fledged business where I ended up just dropping out of college and said, forget it, I'm going to focus this direction and grow the business.
You knew what you needed at that point.
Yeah.
And you were also into cars before.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That was your passion.
I mean, CRXs were my first passion, right? But then as you start getting into that, you go, oh, well, some other Hondas are cool. And oh, you know, 911s are pretty cool. Oh, yeah, Ferraris are all right. Oh, yeah, I mean, I guess I'd settle for a, you know, exotic or, Supras are pretty cool. You know, so you just end up like, right?
Yeah,
you end up really kind of understanding what you like, and then it's natural, it's our organic growth of being in the cars. So I was just really always interested in like getting my hands dirty and like learning mechanical things.
Okay.
My dad was like a builder, house builder, and he would like handyman and all this stuff, and I would help him. I would mix concrete, I would lay bricks, I would do like stuff when I was a kid, and that was always like made me feel really good to be able to finish a project like that. So cars were, I mean, I was like, I remember my dad didn't know anything about cars really.
Yeah.
And I fixed, he had like a mass airflow sensor issue on his Toyota truck.
Yeah.
And I literally like diagnosed it, fixed it, got it done for as cheap as possible, like, you know, eBayed the part. And he was just like blown away that like a 14, 15 year old kid could just like fix his truck and not know anything about like how it actually worked. And
that's
I just like
awesome.
Figured it out, right? So then he's like, you need to do that. I'm like, yeah, you're right.
That you know? Sense of accomplishment.
Yeah. That was the accomplishment right there.
Oh, yeah. So were you always most interested in building, or did you really like the car culture as much or motorsport?
I liked the culture. I liked being around people that had similar interests. I also like the motorsport stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a little bit involved with that. Like I started racing, bringing my car to the track and doing track days, like a good amount.
Sweet.
And all my friends would like go and we would do that. But it really was like, man, I'm not that fast of a driver and I know I'm not that fast of a driver. So I need to kind of focus away from driving the car. And maybe I'd be better, you know, as a mechanic on the car, you know, maybe doing data or physical mechanic or whatever. So then that's when I started kind of to pivot a little bit and like focus more on that. And then the culture, like car meets and stuff were always really fun.
Yeah.
You know, and you get to like bounce ideas off people and see what people's builds are all about.
Mm-hmm.
So car shows, you know, car shows are car shows and they have that vibe that this Fast and the Furious thing really like, like kind of kills that whole like, it kind of gives it cringiness
a
to
little,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
But like a cars and coffee style event is money. Really, really cool. That's like, that's great. Because you can show off your accomplishments, but then you can also meet a bunch of people. You can meet clients. You can do all these different things. So I really like the cars and coffee style shows scene, if you will. And then I really like the technical, mechanical, like problem solving, that part of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's awesome. So EV stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? First off,
yeah.
So you have a talk show with Big Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's right here on this couch.
This very couch.
Yeah.
So if you guys haven't heard of that, then check it out. It's on YouTube, Car Talk with R&B. In episode number 24,
okay.
which was like a year ago.
Okay, it's a year ago.
He was asking you, he's like, so, you know, what are you most excited about? Where do you think the industry is going? And you guys talked about that for a while. It was really interesting conversation.
Kind of remember that, yeah.
One thing you said was, well, there's this EV thing I'm kind of interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, a year later, you know, what is this EV thing? And it seems to be maybe sticking around.
Yeah, I mean, it's still an EV thing. Like I was telling you out there, like when we were talking in the shop, like I still have only driven two EV cars.
Yeah.
And both, and one was a 911 and one was an S2000.
Good choices.
I don't know there's many people in the world that could say that, you know, the two EV cars I've ever driven are those platforms.
Not even a Leaf.
Right, like not even like, I mean, I've ridden in Teslas, I've ridden in Rivians and they were super cool and super fast. And I definitely think that it's sticking around. Like I was telling you before, I don't feel like my S2000 was good enough for me, meaning I didn't learn everything that needs to be learned and I want to give it another go.
Yeah.
So then it turned into, well, if I'm going to give it another go, I may as well make like a kit because people seem to really been taken to the Civic hatchback build.
Yeah.
So I got another Civic hatchback and it's going to be a kit. So my goal is to take my white Civic EG and I'm going to make a kit. And then I have my EK hatch is going to be the all-wheel drive monster car, chassis all cut up.
Yeah.
Just like a nightmare on wheels, crazy build. And then the EG is going to be like no cuts.
We'll pass the banana test.
Yeah.
On the seat, right?
Yeah.
Pin that thing up.
Yeah. Hopefully it just stays. Yeah. It's going to be fast for sure. But yeah, there's a lot to, you know what? I'm going to step back just a little bit. When I was first starting to learn about EVs and the conversion space, BC is one of the main people that I talk to because I don't really have a lot of connections in the circle. I'm kind of like over here on the side. I don't know all these tuning shops that are starting to do EV conversions. Like I don't really know them.
Sure.
So it's not like I can just make a phone call and be like, hey, you know, from whatever EV, let's chit chat for a bit. So BC had this idea that he was going to do, a Tesla powered 911.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this, I wanted to do a 911, but I want to do a parallel hybrid. So that was going to be a gasoline engine with an electric motor fitted between the transmission and the engine. And I still have this project. It's just, there's reasons why it's not even here at my shop. But BC was like, you know, hey, come over and help me with this car. So I come over there, you know, consultation to figure out how this wiring is going to work and stuff. And then he's like, yeah, like you should do one of these. And I'm like, a Tesla swapped car is too easy. That's what I said to him.
Too easy.
I'm looking for more of a challenge. And he's like, oh, you asshole. It's probably what he's thinking in his head. You know, he's like, I really think that you should look into this before you quickly judge, right?
Right.
Because I'm thinking, oh, you just take the motor. The motor has the inverter and the drive unit. It's all built in. And you just throw some axles in it and hook up a battery. And then the car just goes.
Right.
And that's all it was in my head. But there's so much to the strategy of everything.
Hmm.
The way that the cooling system works, the way that you know, you're managing the torque and voltage means power. And there's so many ways to skin the cat.
Yeah.
That I didn't even understand. I didn't know that, right? So BC kind of said, hey, before you do this crazy parallel hybrid build that seems really incredible, but very complicated, maybe think about doing something a little bit more like tame. So I'm like, just something more simple that's full EV. I'm like, all right, I'll think about it. Yeah, whatever. So then I thought about it more and I realized, damn, I probably should like get my feet wet with something a little bit more simple. It was more simple maybe, but still very, very, very complicated.
Yeah.
And there's still a ton to learn on it. So
that was the S2000.
That was the S2000, yeah. And like right now, I think I've rebuilt the car. Well, not fully rebuilt, but like it's gone under the knife like 4 times now. And it's so frustrating because it's like technology advances.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a point where I was like, okay, I'm only going to build this car once. I'm going to do it right. the way I want. And then what it ends up turning into is, oh, I maybe made a mistake. Like, that was the bad choice, right? Okay, let's revisit that later. And then I reconstruct that. And then, oh, AEM all of a sudden now has control over the drive with a circuit board replacement. That sounds way better because now I can control all these other things that I really wanted to do, right?
Yeah.
So then that system, like right now, I'm actually buttoning that system up, and it's going to be the way I want it very soon. And you know, it's just growth, right? So yeah. It sucks because the car gets put together and then it gets torn down, put together and torn down. So it's
like
a lot of work.
That has a project car knows that while you're at it, that's real. But you're also struggling with the fact that this EV thing, the industry, the parts is changing crazy fast.
Crazy fast.
So it's like 2x.
I don't know much about it because like I said, I'm not really involved in all the circles of EV. I know now don't take offense to this, okay? But my original thought behind these like cars that are like EV converted and stuff.
Yeah.
Is that they're the white boy computer nerds.
Nice.
That aren't really into cars.
Yeah.
They're into electronics, right?
Sure.
And they're programmers and they're on the nerdy level, uh-huh. Right? And I know I'm on the nerdy level, but it's like in my head it's a different
level.
It's different, right? So like I'm a car guy, like I'm into like, you know, building cars.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the EV guys are like over here, like they're the computer nerds, sure. Right? And I mean, there's some truth to it that I haven't seen a lot of those backyard projects mm-hmm. executed to high levels.
Right.
You know, there is some and they're definitely evolving faster and faster by the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, if you look back like 5 years, I mean, I don't want to say any names, but there's like the Honda car that was Tesla converted uh-huh. that looks like a piece of junk. And I mean, that's not built by like my kind of a car builder.
Right.
Right. And then there's some other cars that were like these conversions and they're just not executed on the level that I would see myself in.
Sure.
Right. So yeah, it's like, it's very different. So then I didn't really have a lot of guys in the industry that I could communicate with because I don't know them. And then other guys like, and so BC was like literally the only one yeah. that like we do gasoline race vehicles and now we're dabbling in this other kind of foreign circle. So yeah, I don't remember what the question was now, but that was I went on a rant with it, but
I you know, it's a good point. It's a whole new group of people who are becoming car people.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've noticed and am excited about is that, you know, EVs and gasoline is a little bit polarizing, but if you look at it from the perspective of just people who like cars, mm-hmm. there's way more in common with gasoline and EV cars
yeah.
than not.
That's very true.
And that's yeah. really cool. It's like, you know, I'm excited to go to the racetrack and I'd have a lot to learn about suspension. Every single person who's been racing since carbureted muscle cars mm-hmm. knows more than I do about suspension.
Sure.
And I'm going to be a sponge. It's going to be great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to be talking EVs at all.
Right.
It's all just car stuff.
It's all car stuff. Yeah. And that started to happen a lot more. And yeah, for me, you know, I know a lot about those other things. And then now I'm a sponge for like all the EV stuff,
yeah.
you know? And I don't really like, there's still a lot for me to learn, but I prefer to learn things like on my own versus like looking up things and researching all these things. I feel like that doesn't, maybe you copy and paste it mm-hmm. and you don't like actually understand why you're doing it. Mm. So I like to kind of learn on my own, if that makes sense.
Do you like go forward until you hit a roadblock and then that's when you reach
yeah,
out
that's
and
when
try
I start
to figure it out?
Yes,
and
exactly.
Then get past that one,
right.
Keep going.
Yeah. And like I've gone down roads where I'm like, this is the way I'm doing it because I think that this is right. And then when you do have to like search for help and then they see how you're doing it, they're like, whoa, you either it's like you came to that consensus on your own. Mm-hmm. Wow. Like that's pretty cool. Or it's like, I never thought about it. That's way off in left field. And I'm like, oh, am I out? Am I so far away that it doesn't like it's bad, you know? Anyway, so there's good and bad when it comes to that. But that's like the way that I kind of like prefer to do things.
Sure.
So.
I love that.
Yeah.
So the EK build, that's what's up right now. Can you take us through a little bit of a deeper dive on that?
Yeah, let's do that one. So the EK is kind of, it's going to be everything that I have learned and I feel like I've done wrong with the S2000. And then what I've always wanted to do to the S2000. Okay. So for example, that car has a dual motor all-wheel drive setup. All right. So I am using a Tesla Model S front drive unit. It's flipped around because the diff and the fitment and the way that it needs to be is pretty much it's reversed rotation. So we have to do modifications for that. Okay. But that's a front Tesla S motor. And then it's a rear Tesla S motor in the back. To fit that, my buddy Brian from Haas Sport, they do a lot of Honda mount kits. If you're not familiar with Haas Sport, it's just a huge company doing all things mount related. You're doing a K-Swap and a Civic, like that's who you use. So I've been talking to Brian a long time about potentially doing EV. And he's like, let me know when you have the right motor for me to do it with.
Cool.
And so him and his team built a mount kit for me. So it's this bolt-in kit to mount that front drive unit.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And then the rear was done. My buddy Chris Eimer, he's a fabricator. And I spent a lot of time figuring out how I wanted this to work. Like the motor cradle to fit and how it's going to be as bolt-in as possible. Mm-hmm. You still got to cut stuff. But, you know, it's like, how do you fit a drive unit in the back of a front-wheel drive car? So we figured all that out. He designed a repeatable mount to put that Tesla drive unit in the rear. And then we're using a spindle setup, which is used in all-wheel drive Honda conversions. So they have the differential that they'll mount, and then the gasoline engine will have a drive shaft and a gasoline engine in the front. Well, I'm using that trailing arm setup because they have it set up where it's punched out. It's called S1 built, and it's punched out for axles. And that's really what you need. You need to be able to mount axles in the back. So the S1 built trailing arm setup combined with, you know, now your axles are all set up. Chris Eimer's mount kit setup that we made. Haas Sport's front mount. We have two motors now mounted in the car. Okay. Then I decided to go with an 85 kilowatt Tesla pack.
Nice.
And the reason why I went that large with the kilowatts is because the battery construction is the 18650 cells.
Okay.
And they're not very tall. They're like less than 4 inches. And if you're going to cram batteries in a Civic, you would need the back space or the front space, but those are both occupied with motors, right? So now where else do you have space? Like where the gas tank was, I guess? Well, there's really not. I got two motors. If I did like a 16 or 18 kilowatt Pacifica pack or like a Chevy Volt pack.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a big enough battery to drive those two motors. It's like, why do you have two motors, right? So I needed something that had more density, more kilowatt hour, just a bigger pack in general. And that pack matches those two motors from the factory. So they're low profile, so I can actually fit 8 modules underneath the seats. So the floor is cut out. There's a frame built that actually looks a lot like when you skin open a Tesla Model S, the way they mount the little like...
Skateboards.
Yeah, it's a skateboard now. So it's underneath the seats. And then I'm also having vertically stacked modules in the back where the gas tank was, and then a little bit further back in the car. So I'm able to somehow, I think, hopefully, cram 85 kilowatt Tesla pack into the Civic with dual motors. The next probably big thing, aside from like visual stuff, you know, like it's all Civic Type R style and it's going to be like, you know, it's going to look the part.
Yeah.
It's not going to look electric this time. It's just going to be a very timeless Civic Type R theme, kind of
classic,
really classic Honda, right? But the one main thing that's actually like pretty complicated and involved is the way I'm doing the cooling system.
Okay.
So as you know, but maybe not everybody that knows stuff about EVs, cooling is pretty critical and it's very complicated.
Yes.
And I remember, you know, like the first person that didn't know anything about EVs that saw my Civic, they're like, you have a CSF radiator in here? Like, what's that for? I'm like, for my cooling.
Yeah.
They're like, what do you got to cool? I'm like, inverters and motors and batteries and onboard chargers. And they're like, huh? Right?
Plus the cabin.
Right. Yeah, you have to heat the cabin. So for the cabin, I'm going to do a PTC heater. So it's electric 400-volt heater.
Cool.
So that'll be my cabin heat for creature comfort.
Okay.
And then I'm also going to have air conditioning. Air conditioning is going to be, it's going to double as creature comfort for the interior for myself and my co, you know, drivers. But it's also going to be part of the strategy in cooling all those components that I just spoke about.
Yeah.
Okay. So how this works is I'm going to simultaneously cool, heat, and have full control over the entire system with one radiator. And how I do that is with all these little check valves that they're actually off-the-shelf Tesla parts. There's three-way and four-way valves. And these valves are basically diverting water into different directions. And then they're, in some cases, it'll divert water through a chiller. And a chiller is a Freon-based heat exchanger.
Okay.
So I'll be able to have full control with my AEM system, and then my we have a Rewire PDM that we're using, and I'll be able to control those valves based on strategy without flipping buttons or doing anything, because it'll there are thermistors and temperature sensors and all these things in my system that will be able to kind of self-strategize, chill, heat, whatever's necessary, and isolate different loops. So I can cool my motor and heat my battery, or I can do vice versa, or I can keep it all into one, you know, figure eight loop, right?
That's
so
awesome.
You can isolate things, you can introduce things. Like I can block off my radiator completely and bypass it, or I can introduce it, or I can introduce that to a chiller, or I can introduce that to a heater. So it can do all the things, right? And it's set up that way because that's how OEs strategize it. Mm-hmm. And they use CAN messages, solid state relays, you know, which is like my PDM systems, to send and distribute power to all the different devices without driver input. So I can request to turn on, you know, a Freon cooler. Or I can just let the system just do it for me.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So and without all of the inputs, then that's going to make the interior extra clean.
Right? Yeah.
You won't have to have a big pad or something.
There's not going to be like a big screen. I'm going to have a small keypad.
Okay.
And the keypad is going to do all my driver controls and then also like overrides for some stuff. Mm-hmm. And then also give me like a light to show that it's on. So like, and if it's overcurrenting, if it outputs overcurrenting. So for example, I don't have to press any buttons to turn a fan on because it knows what the temperature is. It's already strategizing for me.
Okay.
It'll turn on a fan, but I want to know my fan's on. So I can see on the keypad, it'll go green on the keypad and that output will show that it's on. And if there's an issue, like let's say there's a dead short, something gets pinched, I don't know, right?
Yeah.
Something that overcurrents that output, I'll have it programmed. So it'll go from green to yellow to red. Right. And I'll probably do it where green's on. Yellow is that there's possible faults because it's overcurrenting, but it's like trying to save it.
Sure.
And then red would be the output's no longer working. It's the same strategy in like Formula One cars when your fuel pump is, you know, it's all management systems with all the outputs and you can override things and change things. And it's all that high-end motorsport tech, but just converted over to like the EV platform.
That's so cool. And so, eventually this is something that people might be able to come to you and say, hey, I want to do this too.
Yeah. Like I actually build wire looms for some companies, private label, that are starting to implement their own kits in their specific demographic vehicles.
That's awesome. Right?
Like for example, BC does a lot of 911s and we supply all of his AEM VCU wiring harnesses. And like people don't necessarily know that, but you know, that's something that we work on with him. And then that just betters our understanding of this whole process.
Sure.
So then when I come to like, you know, doing building a system and helping design. Like we work with a company called APP, and they do Cascadia motor integration. So APP has their Cascadia control, and like we help them, and we work with AEM to develop that entire package. So
sweet.
And you know, they're moving forward with a bunch of battery tech and like a lot of really cool stuff.
Cascadia. Mm-hmm. So I was at Holly High Voltage last year, and they provided some of the good stuff for a race car that was there.
Yeah.
And I just briefly was talking to the guy, and I was like, "Man, this car is awesome. It's a kit car, custom build."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
"Oh, the little white car." Yeah.
No, this was a gray one.
Okay. Sure. So sorry.
But anyway, he's like, "Yeah." So it's been going well on the track and whatnot, but we had to turn it down to 60% power, and because they have some issues, some of those yellow lights, right, going on. Mm-hmm. And I go, okay, so what's it putting down? And 800 to the wheels. Mm. That's 60%.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, and that's when my mind goes Cascadia. Okay, yeah. That puts
two,
down some
two
power.
Motors.
Yeah,
two I motors.
So
yeah,
I believe so.
So axial motors. Like the pancake motors, they're called a lot of times. You can actually stack those together, like rotary engines.
Okay.
So that's super cool because whatever you have space for, like the Mach-E 1400 that I was telling you about.
Yeah.
They're running those pancake style axial motors, and they got four of them lined up in the back, and then they got three of them in the front, four in the rear tires. And three in the front. So that's split up, and you could just, I mean, wherever you have space and real estate, you should put more motors. Now, the problem though is the price on those things. Jeez. And you have to run their fancy, really high-end inverters. So every motor needs its own inverter, right? You can't just have like one inverter or two inverters and then run a bunch of motors off of it. You literally need the inverter has to control each motor. So you get, that Cascadia stuff, they're trying to figure out ways to package it and making it a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could generally, those axial motors are like $10,000 to $15,000 each. And then the inverters are $10,000 to $15,000 each. So, you know, if you have seven motors, that's a lot of money.
Yep.
And then you need batteries and you need everything else to build the car. And then you need a gearbox to be able to, that's not all of it. You know, you need to be able to get that to your wheels. So it's the Cascadia stuff's awesome, and if they can figure out ways to package it well, they are already, but they're doing like these drive units that very much resemble like what Tesla has.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the motor, inverter, and gearbox in a one package.
Integrated.
Right. Yeah, and they're awesome, but you know, they're still $20,000. And the Tesla stuff is used, and it's $1,500, $3,000. So, you know, I would love to have put, I actually reached out to Cascadia, I'm not going to lie, and just see if they'll just give me some motors for my Civic.
Uh-huh.
They weren't really interested. And I'm like, okay, cool. So you know what? I don't really want to spend like $40,000 just in like inverters and motors and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do this. The budget for the car was $100,000. I'm trying to do it all for under $100,000.
Okay.
Right? So far with what I have and some cool parts that aren't on the car right now, I'm at 51,000. So I'm doing pretty well.
You're in budget.
I'm in budget right now, and I don't need too much more to finish the car.
Okay.
I actually already bought all my AEM stuff.
Okay.
Dash, VCU. I already have all my PDM stuff. So all the electronics, onboard charger. Only thing that I still need is my BMS.
You have batteries already too?
Yeah, I have batteries.
Sweet.
Yeah. I have Tesla batteries already. I got a really good deal on those. It was like $16,000 for the whole pack.
What?
So they're like $1,000 a module.
Yeah.
So that was pretty fair because I think I've heard people spending up to $1,500 a module.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're pretty much buying batteries based on kilowatt because everybody uses them for off-grid stuff.
Uh-huh.
And that just drives the prices up.
Yeah.
So now you're pretty much paying per kilowatt. So I think I got a pretty good deal.
Yep.
But yeah, it's like, geez. It's expensive.
It is.
It's expensive. I mean, I'm over here like checking myself going, okay, wait, you can only afford Tesla motors, bro. You can't afford Cascadia. You know, you can ask them if they'll give them to you for free, but you know, it's just, yeah, it's even, it's a lot for me to chew. So
totally.
Yeah.
Well, I think that what the way that you're doing it makes a lot of sense, and it helps. It's going to help to bring that price down,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
When this turns into a kit, other people can do it. Then it will, you know. Plus OEMs, Tesla, they're making more cars. There's going to be more parts available.
Sure.
So hopefully, you know, as time goes on, then mm-hmm. prices will drop and builds will be in the five figures instead of the six. Which,
yeah,
you know, heck, there's people that are doing gas cars for that amount too. If you know you're getting into.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, and then you have these like bespoke cars coming out. You know, it's so easy to say the Singers and the whatever, but all these bespoke cars, people are paying crazy money for them, right? And the right market, this is my train of thought. Like, I know that 911s and BMW E30 M3s and like they all have a lot of value to people.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that like my Honda crowd, my Honda community, eventually, you know, these people that are starting to do a little bit, you know, better for themselves, but then their high school dream car was always that Integra Type R.
Yes.
You know, like that's me, right? And I think that I'm not scared to spend $100,000 on a custom electric Civic project. But by me doing that, I will then make this available now for the next guy for maybe half that.
Hell yeah.
Right?
Totally.
So, and I've always been like that. I spend all the money so that but it's development. It's development costs.
Sure.
And like I can, you know, write most of it off of my business,
R&D.
which is great. Yeah. But yeah, like R&Ding these things makes it for the community to be able to grow and do more with it. So yeah, I'm really definitely looking in the future for the Civics to be a very viable platform for EV. Because I can't wait for the day that all these cars are on the road and they're all smog exempt.
Uh-huh.
And I live in California and F the police, they pull me over and it's like, what did I do wrong?
Yep.
You know, yeah, my car looks like a rice rocket to you, but there's a lot of tech in it. It's totally legal. Everything mm-hmm. that we've done is California exempt from smog.
Yep.
And we can pretty much have a race car on the street if we want. It's just an electric version of a race car. So that would be a really cool day to be able to have a bunch of Hondas that are all electric and totally, you know, exempt from smog.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm doing it for performance. I'm not a tree hugger. My family is a bunch of hippies.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally, nice. They're all NorCal, like live in the trees, like that kind of, you know, cabins in Northern California and stuff. So I grew up very, you know, very hippie.
Sure.
But I'm not a tree hugger.
I'm from NorCal too.
Yeah,
so
okay.
I get it.
Hell in NorCal,
I know those
folks. For sure. So I definitely am not like swayed. Like me getting interested in electric is not for any specific reason. I'm using used batteries, so that's actually really good for the environment because mm-hmm. you're giving them a recycled another chance.
Sure.
So I do like that part of it. And I'm using all, you know, used Tesla. I mean, I'm not manufacturing anything that's going to actually, you know, hurt the environment, but I'm really doing it for performance.
Right.
Because I want to go fast. I want to I want the acceleration.
Hell
I want my customers to enjoy a race applicable car.
Yeah.
That's my goal is to make it a performance vehicle and use as little resources as possible is nice, you know?
Yeah, totally. And that means more people can buy them too.
Yeah.
And have a ton of fun.
Yeah, and all the cars you're talking about that are, you know, hitting the roads and then going to the scrap yards and all these EV cars, we're gonna have like all these great parts, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited about that too.
Yeah. So you could go off the shelf and you could buy a Cascadia, or you could use a used Leaf or Volt or you know, whatever motor that like, you know,
totally.
Tesla motors, and it's all very good candidates, and people will develop more and more stuff for those.
Yeah. So the EK, that's like the all-wheel drive. It's going to be a rocket.
Mm-hmm.
You have another one in the works.
Yeah. The EG is going to be super tame. The goal for that is to just have a front motor.
Okay.
And it'll have a battery pack in the back. Probably like rear seat kind of area. I've seen a lot of people kind of doing just big battery packs in the back
mm-hmm.
so that they don't want to cut the car up. So I kind of like have adopted that as a viable option is to just kind of like, you know, put the battery pack in the back, the electric motor in the front, and then I'll do all the wiring and electronics and interfacing and screens and however that needs to be done.
Yeah.
And I definitely want that car to be the kit, the first development car for a kit for a Honda Civic. And the really cool thing is that, you know, the EK is an EK, and then the EG, the DC2, they all have the same engine bay layout. So that mount kit that's on my EK, that mount kit will go into an EG, and it'll also go into a DC2 Integra.
Oh, perfect.
So that actually, that one solution carries over all those three platforms. And that's all so the like cool. Golden era Honda cars.
Yeah.
That's like what we want, right? So that mount kit will single-handedly work for everything. And making it modular with all the chassis is super important. And I want to only be able to, you know, design one or two differences. I want everything to kind of just be universal fit for all those chassis.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so far we did it right with that mount kit.
And it looks really good too.
Yeah, it does. It's different.
Yeah,
it's very different. Yeah.
You putting thought into weight balance with the batteries?
Yeah, totally. And that's one of the reasons why I really didn't love just stuffing the batteries in the trunk of the car.
Yeah.
Because that feels so like, you know, front wheel drive car, all your weight's in the front. And now you kind of flip that on its head because now you have weight in the front, but not as much weight as an engine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the batteries are obviously always going to be heavier than your motor. So yes, the kit might not be a perfect 50-50 weight balance, but I'm going to try very hard to make my EK as 50-50 as possible. And with that skateboard design and putting all the weight low and centralized,
that'll help.
That'll help a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing that the EK development could lead to is people that might want to do parallel hybrid systems. So this is a third thing that I haven't even talked about yet,
okay.
But eventually I want to take my rear mount kit, combine that with an engine in the front, and then have that be a parallel hybrid. So parallel means they're working together.
Uh-huh.
They don't have like a motor charging a, you know, battery charging a da 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 da. It's literally one system and another system, which is the engine and then the motor, and they're working in the same direction to the same goal, and that's to propel the car forward.
That'd be cool.
So that'd be really neat. And if you did an all-wheel drive setup like that, your rear wheels, instead of the front-wheel drive Honda setups with a front engine where there's drivetrain loss,
mm-hmm.
and it's still making more power, this would be actually adding power and simultaneously propelling the car forward with drive wheels in the rear.
Yeah.
So I could see that being an amazing concept, but something that's a little bit more involved,
mm-hmm.
and something that'll have to come like once these other two cars are like done and like off of my plate.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to try to do that one day as well.
Yeah, that would be cool. That'd be cool. And then you get the best of both worlds.
Exactly.
You get that low-end torque from the EV, which would be fun.
Yeah, and I'd probably design it where it'd be like a regen system, where it would be like a KERS system, basically. So there wouldn't be, I mean, maybe it would be a plug-in if you needed it, but I feel like it would just be like a really small battery pack to mm-hmm. keep the weight down, and maybe just like a 200-volt or like a low-voltage system where you could just like regen and cram that battery, stuff it full, and then just drain it and deplete it fast.
Yeah.
Like just voltage would just be going in and then just instantly coming
works
out.
Works like a capacitor more.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
So just that back and forth.
That'd be cool.
Of power. So that way it's like, it's not like you charge it and then you're out. Like it's always giving back and it's always giving forward.
So we talked about a couple different kind of takes on this, different types mm-hmm. of swaps, different cars. What are you seeing when it comes to tuning? And how is that changing with EVs? Because obviously there's a lot of tuning and setting up that has to be done on these.
Yeah, so there's, when you're talking combustion engines, there's a difference between, I'm going somewhere with this. there's a difference between a tuner and a calibrator.
Okay.
Okay, so you have a tuner, you're actually adjusting you know, airflow in and volumetric efficiency and all these strategies with this gasoline combustion engine. With an EV, it's just not the case. You pretty much request the torque and then you try to maintain that torque for the longest amount of RPM, of motor RPM, motor speed.
Yeah.
And then you try to prolong that torque number, because it pretty much, like a graph on an internal combustion engine, goes slowly up. Mm-hmm. And then EV system, it goes directly to the torque request at 1 RPM, not 1,000 RPM, 1 RPM. And then you want to try to maintain that torque request over however extended period of RPMs.
Yeah.
Right? And the longer that you can hold that, the faster the car is, right? So it's really a torque-based system where there's not much tuning to it. However, there's a lot of setup and calibration that needs to be done. Like I'm talking about all these three-way valves and PDMs and VCUs and battery management systems. All this info is coming over on this bus, and you need to be able to control all those things, but not have to think about any of it, right? So a tuner in an EV space, as far as conversions go, is going to be the guy that's setting up the PDM, the VCU, all the valves, wiring the car, and making the strategy so seamless that the driver doesn't even know all these things are happening.
Yeah.
So that's, for me, right now, because things could change. I mean, I don't know what the future has to it, because maybe you will be able to tune an EV motor eventually or something. People will figure out ways to do it. But
maybe
me now, it's more of a calibration tuner versus somebody that's like, you know, oh, I'm going to make your engine have more power and I'm going to make the graph look like this and we're going to turbocharge it. It's not like that. This is literally a torque request demand, and then you're trying to maintain that torque.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's where, that's how I see it now.
I'm curious if we're going to see things similar to how people overclock, like gaming computers.
Oh, yeah, sure,
I could see, like, if you go in, you know, you're on a computer, they're overclocking the CPU, that creates more heat. That heat need, now you need water cooling or liquid nitrogen or something like that. I mean, that's kind of similar systems, like with your three-way valves and the battery, powertrain, creature comforts, and needing to move that around, or like wiring. Like, you want to put more juice, then maybe you need thicker gauge wiring. Maybe people, maybe there'll be kits someday to, like, change the gauge of wire to be able to modify how an OEM car runs.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know.
If there's more, if you can have a higher torque request number, and then that torque request number demands more more amp draw on whatever circuit, then yeah, then you might need a bigger wire, and then that leads to these, like, you know, like really old school, like, oh, you change your ground wire cables out, you get more power because your ignition system doesn't have to work as hard. And there's, you know, it makes the efficiency of the ignition coil, you know, the efficiency level goes up. And then so that equals more power. I mean, these are things that, yeah, eventually people will find out little things like that with EV.
Yeah.
Or then there's like hacking, right? So maybe they'll be an open source for your Tesla, and then you can demand a higher torque value, and instantly now your car makes more power. Or you can, as we know, voltage equals power. So if you can get an inverter that can accept a higher voltage from the battery pack. So if you have a 403 volt system, and then you bump that up to a 460 volt system, then you can have more voltage. And if your inverter can handle it, that will equal free horsepower. So yeah, I mean, like, putting bigger batteries in is like the layman's way of adding more. That's a strategy to add more power.
Yeah.
Right.
Bigger batteries.
Yep. Bigger batteries. But you have to have certain components have to be able to support that. But I mean, I've even looked in to see like how much voltage the inverters that I have can handle.
Yeah.
And I don't know yet, but like, I mean, I've heard from people, from like guys at like AEM, that like a Tesla inverter can handle like 460 volts. So there's, and to get 460 volts, you just add two modules because they're 24.5 volts each.
Mm-hmm.
So if all the other electronics can support 460 volts, Then if I just add two more modules, the car will go faster, but I'll add a little bit more weight.
Yeah.
Maybe 100 pounds. So then am I going to go 100 pounds faster? I don't know. So there is room to change things in the future to try to make the car make even more power.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's super cool.
So all of these, this stuff, it's kind of new frontier. You're learning it as you're going. Everyone is kind of learning it. I mean, how is that going from kind of working in Hondas and seeing the best of the best builds and then kind of having to look at like, oh, wait, we're starting from scratch now. And there isn't a formula to build from. I mean, it seems like it's really exciting. I know I'm super stoked.
Yeah, like as a whole, Hondas, for the example, everybody's built them every which way you could skin a cat. You know, like there's a million ways that you could do a Honda. But then EV space is like, man, nobody really knows.
Yeah.
And it's so early. And honestly, that's why I like it. I'm kind of like pretty excited about it because I'm reinventing myself I've been doing this for, I've been doing Honda stuff since 98. Okay. So, and I'm 40. So I've been doing it for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, I honestly told myself like a few years ago, I really got into 911s. I really like 911s and I'm like building them on the side and stuff. But I was like, I'm not going to build any more Hondas. Kind of over it. I've done everything I want to do with a Honda, right?
Uh-huh.
So with this EV thing, yeah, my first instinct was 911 EV. That'd be awesome to, you know, one of the many 911s that I have, maybe one of them will be EV.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it's like, well, why don't I just do a Honda?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man, now I'm back. Uh-huh. I'm back with another Honda.
Those are famous last words.
Holy shit. So I'd say that it's really rekindled like my drive for, I'm excited about Hondas again.
I love that.
Yeah. So that's actually really neat because I bought like three Hondas in the last like few years. So yeah, back in.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So you have any advice for people who want to start learning about this stuff or start doing this stuff?
Well, I will say that it's kind of challenging for me and I'm like pretty well versed with cars. So don't feel let down if it's just like way, way overwhelming. But like maybe take a different step approach than me and you know, watch all the YouTube that you can where people are doing a lot of stuff the wrong way. But like, you know, you got to learn somewhere, right? So, and there's a lot of really good forums that are, it's funny because forums are so like years ago.
Yeah.
But
great info.
Great info on EV stuff in forums.
Yeah.
So I'd say YouTube and forums are really, really good. But just to know like the basics, AMEV has booklets of information. And they have videos and they have a lot of resource on how these systems work together. Like what's an onboard charger? What's a DC to DC? Why would you need DC when you already have DC? Like, what is that about? And like, oh, okay, you learn, though that makes a lot more sense,
yeah.
Right? So you need to know, I remember looking, okay, like BC, what components do you have on your car? Like, what do you even need to do this, right? And so I guess find a mentor if you can.
Mm-hmm.
He's been a mentor, but then it's funny because I'm also a mentor to him because we're doing things a little differently and then we bounce ideas.
Yeah.
So try to find somebody that is doing something with you, maybe different, but also doing it that you can talk to.
Cool.
So that's probably the main ones that I would do.
Right on.
Yeah. Well,
thank you so much for your time. Really
yeah.
appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for coming, dude.
This was like an awesome evening. And super exciting.
Cool. Thank you.
Right on.